Welcome back to the Epic Universal Podcast. I'm entertainment writer Jim Hill, and I'm joined this evening by my co-host, Eric Hersey. And he and I are recording this week's episode on Tuesday, April 23rd, 2024. And Eric, as you know, that's just 3 days out from the official start of the Universal Studios Hollywood summer-long celebration of the 60th anniversary of their tram tour, which actually starts the very same day this podcast goes live, April 26th. But that got off to a rocky start this past weekend, didn't it?
Yeah, just a little bit now. Now I will tell you, Jim, that although it did get off to a rough start, I've been watching more and more YouTube videos of this tram tour and tram tours in general, and boy, am I getting jealous that it's not a quick drive to go check something out. It is really making me think and consider saying, I think Hollywood might be the place to go. So even though there was a little bump in the road, so to speak, this week, it's still something that that tram tour, it gets me.
Okay. Now, remember, you know, you and me and Lauren and Mr. Shul will be out in California for the D23 Expo, and the 60th anniversary version of the tram tour runs through August 11th. And isn't that in the same window of time or, you know, that we're out there? Or
yeah, sounds like it. So, but let's just hope if that does turn into a thing where we go out there and we get to party with the best of them, that we don't have an incident.
Well, all right, tell you what, we'll get to the details in just a moment here. And because I want to stress here, these things happen that, you know, sometimes things don't go according to plan, as the 86-year-old Jay Stein will tell you. He's the MCA executive who helped get the Universal Tram Tour in Hollywood off the ground back in July of 1964. Just to tease the second half of today's show, Jay had a heck of a time figuring out what to do in the upper lot when it came to walk-around characters. And what do I mean by that? Okay, just keep this phrase in mind as we get to that part of today's show. Little kids and icons of horror don't mix. Okay. But first comes the news portion of this week's show, which is brought to you by Touring Plans. And Touring Plans can help you save time, and it can help you save money at theme parks like Universal Orlando or Walt Disney World. So please check them out at touringplans.com. Now, quick note here. Len Testa is, of course, the brains behind touringplans.com, and he and I do a little podcast called Disney Dish. And on this week's episode, we actually talked at length about a lot of Universal stuff. We did, the Stella Nova and the Terra Luna?
Yep. Right. You gave the opening dates. You kind of go over some of the details there. And that's what's kind of great about listening to the Disney Dish is like, I get a little insight right into some of this information that seems like you. And what I was really excited about was that survey. I thought that was ingenious.
Yeah, the Universal Kids survey for the park they're building in Bliss, Texas. And then, of course, you know, we got the news about tickets going on sale for Halloween Horror Nights, and again, the most nights they've done to date, 44. It's starting earlier, I want to say August 30th, and ending later, November 3rd. And Mr. Testa has committed to going to September on September 20th. And
press release, and put that out there.
There we go. So, all right. So, you know, but interestingly enough, that brings us to my favorite part of the show, news or not. And is it news or not that Len Testa is going to Halloween Horror Night?
I call that news. And I love the synergy that goes on between the different shows here. So the fact is, the Disney Dish definitely has Universal topics, and you get a totally different insight because you and Len have been covering it for quite some time. I, on the other hand, am looking at these news stories, and boy, did I have a heck of a time finding news this week. And it's not because there isn't news, but as a Google specialist myself, and I understand these things, when I type in Universal Studios news to find the latest stories, it was overtaken by this whole tram incident.
Yeah,
that was page 1, 2, and 3.
It was. And just to get into the particulars, now this happened at 9 p.m. on Saturday, April 20th. And as Eric alluded to at the top of the show, a tram, and what's interesting is that Universal Hollywood's being kind of closed-mouthed about where exactly this happened, but evidently the last car of a tram hit a guardrail on the tram route, and as a direct result, the tram car partially tipped over. And I want to say I've heard that 9 people were actually ejected from the tram.
Oh, geez.
And now I want to stress here that the phrase used was minor injuries. And it's worth noting that the tour did resume, the following day with a modified route. For me, forgive me for doing this, but I'm putting on my those poor bastards hat, because think about this: the merchandise team at Universal just spent all of this time creating this amazing 60th anniversary glamour tram popcorn bucket. I mean, you saw.
Yeah.
You found the photo that we have in the show notes, and it's amazing. It lights up. It has noise. Woody Woodpecker is in the driver's seat.
Can we confirm? No. Was Woody Woodpecker indeed, who has been ejected from his land, did he get a new job? And maybe he needs some on-site training. Watch out for those guardrails.
Wow.
I mean,
you went there. Okay.
If there's a meme. Now, listen, if there's minor injury, yeah. So I do want to say here that, we do feel for anyone that was hurt from course. In this aspect. But in general, I mean, I will tell you, I'm a consumer of memes online, and I have people, and there were lots of memes out there that had any and every type of Jaws attacking the tram, the earthquake, King Kong. I mean, it planned almost too well. If I were the PR team, I would have handed them as bags of money and says, here, take some interviews. That was the most exciting tram and immersive and ride I've ever had.
But now what's interesting is this, I want to point out, this is not the first time that at Universal has experienced something like this. That, remember, we're still days out at this point. We're recording on Tuesday the 23rd. The actual 60th anniversary of the tram tour doesn't get underway till this Friday, April 26th. And this kind of reminds me of what happened with Twister Ride It Out at Universal Studios Florida. By the way, this folks, if you listen to our previous Epic Universe podcast, you heard us talk about this show. This is the show that replaced that theme park's Ghostbusters Spooktacular. This iteration was based on Twister, Universal's hit from the summer of 96. Anyway, Twister Ride It Out, Eric, was originally supposed to open at that theme park in March of 1998. But then, in late February of that same year, 1998, the state of Florida experienced several nights in a row of deadly tornadoes. In fact, this freakish weather event is remembered even today as Night of the Tornadoes. And it was the deadliest tornado event in Florida history. 15 different funnel clouds touched down over the course of this weather event. 42 people were killed, 259 injured, and there was over $200 million in property damage. So picture this. You're Universal Orlando. You've got your Twister Ride It Out attraction that's supposed to open the first week of March. And it's like, oh, God. You know, I mean, anybody who works in themed entertainment knows it would be incredibly poor taste to open this ride right now. So they put it off for 2 months. It did not open at Universal Studios of Florida till May 1st of that same year, 1998. And that said, though, I mean, look, you have to promote things when you run a movie studio that has a theme park. In fact, Universal Pictures right now has a reboot of the Fall Guy TV series coming into theaters in May 4th, and stars Ryan Gosling, Emily Blunt, and obviously they need to do stuff to raise awareness of that. So you found out what they're up to, right, Eric?
Right. Well, firstly, I watched the trailer of the movie, and I mean, I wasn't familiar until you just said it was a TV show, so I guess. But I watched the trailer, and it's about stuntmen, right?
There we go.
Okay.
There
we go. And so I've always heard, now I didn't get to go into the rabbit hole, but there's a Waterworld, or was a Waterworld like stunt show. And so obviously when we found this news article that basically is Universal Studios Hollywood to introduce Fall Guy Stuntacular pre-show to Waterworld to promote the new film.
So, yep. Now, again, this is the Waterworld out in Hollywood, where they're doing it. And just to stress here, limited time run on this thing. It's only through April 27th, so it starts this Saturday, and just runs through May 19th. But it's on the set of the Waterworld show, which, again, that movie came out decades ago.
Oh, forever.
But it's freakishly popular. In fact, what's so fascinating is at least two of the overseas Universals, the one in Beijing and the one in Osaka, they have Waterworlds, you know, because, again, it's a stunt show, and you don't have to translate a stunt show. Though, speaking of stunt show, again, gratuitous plug here, folks. We are just a couple of days out from the launch of the next Disney Unpacked show, where myself, Len, and Jim Shule will be talking about the history of Disney's stunt shows, which, you know, starts with Zorro running along the rooftops of Frontierland, and I think we end with Lightning McQueen, but we'll get to that later. Okay, so. All right, moving on now, you came across some Universal Passholder benefits that return next month, right?
Right, and there's a list of them. So I was like, well, here's three pages in our show notes. So that's a good thing for Universal Passholders. But essentially, it returns May 2024. There's new perks and discounts. So we'll go through. Now, mind you, you can find this online if you need bullet points and so forth. So we'll go over some. And Jim, you just tell me if this sounds like a good deal to you. So right off the get-go, they have a dedicated entrance to Islands of Adventure. Is that a good thing?
Right there.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Yeah. Because you know, I know that they give you me a dedicated entrance to some of the Disney parks. I'm all for it. So we have exclusive dining locations.
Okay, but what's particularly cool about this is Confisco's Grill in Islands of Adventure. That's in the port of entry. It's a wonderful little restaurant, beautifully designed, so rarely open these days. So it's nice that guests will be able to get into them. And then, of course, there's a Lombard Seafood Grill over in Universal Studios, Florida. And I've told you my story about going there once, right?
Jim, I don't believe you have. And if you have, let's hear it.
Okay. All right. This is a whole marriage ago. All right. Before I was with Nancy, this is when I was with the lovely now Michelle Valladolid. And we had taken our friend David Mumford, the Imagineer, you know, to spend the day at Universal. And, you know, so we took him to Lombard's because it's, you know, he's a huge 20,000 Leagues fan. And, you know, there's a lot of the interior of this restaurant that's very Nemo-esque. And so, the restrooms downstairs aren't working and a team member directs me upstairs. And, I come out of the men's room, get turned around, open the door to a conference room, and there is the model for Islands of Adventure. Now, mind you, this is 1993.
Wow.
1994. So it is a full 5 or 6 years before the park actually throws open its doors. And I stand there and gawk in the doorway And, you know, and then close the door and say, I really wasn't supposed to see that. And then I go down to lunch and I sit down at the table with David and Michelle and explain what I just saw. And David Mumford, God love him, he was the most conflicted man on the planet because obviously professional ethics tell him that he should not A, be listening to me talk about this, and B, maybe going upstairs and peeking into the room.
I have to use the restroom real quick. Hold on. I'm sorry.
There we go. All right. So what eventually we settled on is he and I both went upstairs. We did the, you know, we're going to the restroom together, you know, and then we went upstairs. And what David, again, this was sort of ethical hair splitting, but what David did is he stood against the wall facing away from the door as I opened the door, and he proceeded to ask me questions about, all right, you know, what do you see? You know, okay, it looks like there's a drop tower. Okay. You know, and I just, you know, and finally said, oh, we can't do this. And we went back downstairs and finished our dinner. But yeah, I saw the model of islands 5 and 6 years out before the place opened. And it did change, but yeah,
that's so funny. Well, the proper thing, Jim, is you just say, here, take this picture. I'm going to stand. I need just a portrait in front. I just need a selfie, so to speak, in front of this model. Don't worry about the model in the background. Just take a picture of me, and then you would have that. But
yeah. Well, this tells you how long ago this was. We were all bemoaning the fact that we didn't have a film camera with us that day. That, you know, it was back in the day when, you know, I'm sure if anybody had a cell phone, so to speak, it was the size of a cinder block. But all right, anyway.
We have some dining locations. There's some food booths. It's very much, there's a whole bunch on that. I was intrigued by save 45% on the rooms at the Cabana Bay Resort. 45% is a pretty big discount there. So that's pretty interesting by the end of May. There's also 10% off food and drink. We always love that. 10% off mobile food, 25% off VIP tours. That's what I would love. Here's a question that I have for you, Jim. So it's the return of the annual pass holder buttons. So I can tell you, as an annual pass holder of Disney, we get car magnet. Is this the equivalent? Is that what you, like, it's a, like a button that you'd wear, almost like a celebration style button?
Yeah. I mean, you know, and again, the Universal annual pass holders are very passionate about this. And those that have been collecting it for years, it's like, ooh, the new one, ooh, new colors. So yeah, this is a big deal.
And then we have Volcano Bay is early park admission. So that's always nice to have. So you can get in there 30 minutes early. And then, of course, there's this exclusive food and beverage offers. And like I said, there's a whole bunch of those. So what is that news? Does that happen every year? Is this a big sale? What do you think?
I think if you are a Universal annual pass holder, this is news. For the rest of us, it's like, that's cool. I mean, good for you.
Yeah. It doesn't help us out right now, but maybe one day.
Okay. Now, quick question. And I know this is odd, but your son Miles, how tall is he?
Oh boy, good question. 42 inches. He's tall enough to ride almost everything, almost everything everywhere.
Okay, well, the reason I bring this up is the Pterodon Flyers at the Jurassic Park section of Islands of Adventure closed just recently. And what's concerning a number of folks is that there's no reopening date listed at this point. But the reason I was asking about the height of Miles is that this is one of those rides. I mean, it literally, the idea is you're sitting in this open vehicle with a 10-foot wingspan as if you're being carried by a pterodon. But on the official Universal Resort webpage, it states quite clearly that this ride was designed for little ones. That's why it's recommended that anyone taller than 56 inches does not try to ride it unless they'll be accompanied by a child between 36 and 56 inches tall. So in the best of all possible worlds, this thing reopens by the time you and I and the family go down to check out DreamWorks Land. And, you know, coincidentally, you can use Miles as an excuse to actually go and experience this ride. And I may borrow your son also for the afternoon as well, because I've never managed to get on this thing.
Listen, you can borrow my son and take him all the way up to New Hampshire if you want.
Oh, I would imagine Lauren would have an opinion on
that. That might give us some silence. Well, you know, that is a nugget that you found, Jim, that is intriguing. I've never really seen something like that. It says, well, the only reason you could ride this is if you have a little one with you. You can think of any other theme park ride that has that same verbiage?
This is why Pterodon Flyers has always been, you know, one of those, ooh, I got to get on that. Here, give me a child.
That's so, me in Shades of Green. I'm always like, I need to find someone that has been military. So I'm like,
hey, you happen to be doing a podcast with a veteran. We will work this out.
There we go. All right. We'll swap. You can have a 42-inch.
There we go.
Perfect. All right. Next story. All right. So, Jim, have you seen this? Because I watched this. It's basically a story. It says the internet cannot stop talking about this mysterious new Universal teaser. So on April 18th, there was a cryptic video posted on the social media platforms. And now it says, now that's something we haven't seen in a while. It's an old retro TV and it's like kind of 90s music playing. And so you've seen this.
I have, but at the same time, I am so old school. It's just sort of like, I mean, you mentioned going down the rabbit hole and it's like, I'm old. I don't do rabbit holes. So what's interesting is that just today on social media, somebody posted a cell phone video where effectively it was a Universal team member going up to the Bruce the Shark that used to be part of the features in Amity and talking with him about this very same thing that, a summer full of nostalgia and a new parade and a new show.
This video was like, and it showed like graphics that were equivalent to E.T. and Back to the Future, Jaws, Ghostbusters, all these old things. Then the next story that I had, which was totally separate, basically it's a teaser for the, like what we're assuming is almost a parade. So it is like a box and they say, wait until summer, so forth. Then you open it up and then they're opening up and pulling out all these little tchotchkes that are all kind of related to the same parks. So truth be told, Alicia Stella looked like she posted on Twitter not so long ago that they did trademark the Universal Mega Movie Parade. Do these teasers line up? Does that make sense that they're kind of teasing a parade? Or are they just what are they teasing?
Well, what's kind of ingenious about what Universal is doing for this summer, because remember, we also have our drone and water show that's happening on a Universal Florida Lagoon. The plan here is, you know, people in themed entertainment know that when you are opening a huge new park, people only have so much money for vacations. And when they look at, wow, they'll be opening that huge new park, you know, I should wait. Let's not go this summer. Let's go next summer. If you're going to get people to come through the doors as for the summer of 2024 with Epic Universe opening in 2025, you have to be smart about it. So it's like, hey, a brand new parade. Oh, a nighttime show with drones. Oh, you know, a special promotion that, you know, leans into nostalgia. People who love the old version of the park and, oh, this potentially will involve Jaws or Back to the Future or that sort of thing. I'm there. I mean, that's a really smart thing to do on top of DreamWorks Land.
Right. So. And as you're saying all this, I'm thinking to myself, I'm gonna actually do a listener question to Len and say, Len, so we know for a fact that most Disney World trips are every 3-4 years or so forth. Is Universal the same? Is it the matter of like most people, or is it do they five? I mean, where does it fall in terms of how often do people take? Because I'm thinking to myself, man, I want to go every year. I'm like at the point now, I'm like, well, yeah, DreamWorks Land. Oh, you're going to do something retro. But that's my obsessive like personality. What's normal? So that's very interesting that they're teasing and really trying to get people to come before and not wait for Epic.
Absolutely.
I personally love what they're doing with their marketing as a social media manager for lots of brands. I think it was ingenious. It gets people talking and it's fun in so many different ways. So people are also talking about this next story, Jim. But I do believe it is a rumor at this point in time. We'll fill them in. So the word is that Hollywood Rip Ride Rocket is going to be replaced at some time soon. Or replaced in general. What do you know? Do you think you've been covering this ride?
I have. I mean, I remember when it was first announced back in March of 2008. And, it was an amazing construction project. We really need to do a feature about this because there's so many great stories associated with this coaster. But that first summer, I mean, Universal initially was very upfront about the fact that, oh, yeah, we're opening this Memorial Day of 2009. But then April of that year, word came out, okay, we're going to be delayed. And well, how delayed? Well, summer. Like summer, like 3 months long summer? It's like, yeah, we'll get back to you. And as it turns out, they damn near didn't open till Labor Day. I mean, it finally opened August 19th of 2009. It's got, wonderful onboard audio that you can select the song yourself. That one of the other perks of this ride, at least initially, was the secret menu, so to speak, there were hidden songs that if you knew the right code, for example, you could ride on a Universal coaster listening to the Rainbow Connection, which again, Muppets owned by Disney. Oh, how did that happen?
No, I would love to do a long form story on that. I watched a long form video on YouTube the other day about that. And just, it was quite interesting. So I think that's a deep dive for a future episode for sure.
And just want to throw this question out there and see if anybody knows. I mean, with this many people talking about it, the closing of this attraction seems imminent. And just have to wonder, will Universal actually keep this thing open long enough to be able to celebrate its 15th birthday, which would, again, be August 19th, 2024. And speaking of birthdays, do you want to talk about the anniversary merch that's out there for Ireland?
Yeah, I noticed this the other day, and it just so happens, and because we're about synergy here, you host a podcast video show with my wife talking about merchandise. So I have, been finding pictures of merchandise. So my Google now thinks I'm a giant merchandise fan. So I get served this information. So I know all the stuff. So they just recently put out some 25th anniversary collectible items for the Islands of Adventure. So we have some cool t-shirts. We have some cool pins. The tumblers look quite amazing. I know online people were going all over the dueling dragons, which are no longer there. That's now a Harry Potter thing, but it's showcased on this merchandise. So for the nostalgia people, this is a big deal. And I thought to myself, I'm like, I have zero Universal shirts. And I said, what should I pick for my first Universal shirt? This might be one of the things, because I like this kind of retro.
That would be an excellent choice. Now, mind you, previously, if this sort of merch were available for purchase, you could have probably gone to the Universal Legacy store, which was basically located in the center of City Walk. But that closed in January of this year to then become the Epic Universe Preview Center, based on the photos that have been bubbling up online, they're cruising along with the construction of that. But speaking of things that closed, though, in the past week or so, the Quiet Flight Surf Shop, which had been part of City Walk for years, that shut down. Well, our buddy Bio Reconstruct continues to do his flyovers. And he came across a wonderful new detail in, the DreamWorks land. And, this is something that Universal does outside of its water rides. For example, Popeye and Bluto's bilge rat barges, or Dudley Do-Right's Ripsaw Falls. These are these amazing shed-sized things that I want to say, you put your credit card in and they grab $10, but then it is, you get blasted with hot air. So if you've come off of this flume ride or that sort of thing, and you're soaked, you can get somewhat drier by stepping into one of these things. And as we've noted on previous episodes of the Epic Universe podcast, there's some water-based fun stuff in DreamWorks Land. And what I love is that they put one of these human-sized dryers in that land, but it's themed around the Big Bad Wolf from Shrek. And
that's great.
And it has this great thing on the side of it that says, "I'll huff and I'll puff and I'll dry all your clothes." So, somebody at Universal Creative, earned their money when they came up with that idea for the outside. Now, speaking of the Big Bad Wolf, that makes me think of the Wolfman, an icon of horror who's a member of a very elite group, the Universal Classic Monsters, which is this group of characters that Universal has struggled for the past six decades to successfully bring into the theme parks. And we'll discuss all that on the second half of today's show. But first, this. And we're back. And we're going to be starting here talking about Universal Horror, which brings to mind a topic, Eric, you and I talked about on the last Epic Universal podcast, and that was Abigail, the R-rated horror film that's aimed at a young girl audience that went out into theaters just this weekend. And I think we talked previously about Universal wanted, actually put this film into production because Megan, another horror film that was sort of aimed at the young girl audience, did so well last year. It made $30 million over its opening weekend. But the interesting thing is Abigail only did $11 million. And as we mentioned in the show, Megan, it was able to go out as a PG-13 film. In fact, they deliberately went back and reshot certain scenes to get that PG-13, whereas Abigail is a movie about a vampire and there's blood and gore, it was basically impossible to not get an R. And that film over its opening weekend only made $11 million. So when you contrast that, a $30 million weekend versus an $11 million weekend, that's why Universal fought so hard to get that PG-13. So,
yeah, big difference there. That's
there it is.
You would have had to get rid of a lot of blood and probably a couple F words.
There we go. There we go. Okay, so we mentioned BioReconstruct, just a moment ago in his flyovers. And likewise, we talked earlier on today's show about Alicia Stella, the Permit Princess. Thanks to those two, we have a pretty good handle, about when it comes to how far along things are over at the Epic Universe worksite. And Eric, over the past couple of weeks, you've seen the photos of the flyovers of the Dark Universe portion, and man, it looks like they're doing a great job with celebrating the Universal Classic Monsters, or rather the newish versions of those icons of horror that Universal Creative dreamed up to populate this portion of Universal Orlando's third park, or is it their fourth park? All right. Okay, folks. When Volcano Bay first opened in May of 2017, the PR team at Universal Orlando was very insistent, that all of us who were covering that particular press event use Volcano Bay's official full name, which was Universal Volcano Bay Water Theme Park. And if you said it wrong in front of the PR team, they literally would correct you. It's like, Volcano Bay is not just a water park. It is a water theme park. And then if you push back on the issue, you know, to the effect of, well, no, look, you know, Disney doesn't call Typhoon Lagoon or Blizzard Beach a water theme park. They're perfectly happy with just calling that part of their destination resort, or, you know, in Florida, water park. But Universal, it was like, no, Volcano Bay, when you compare it to Typhoon Lagoon and Blizzard Beach, clearly next level. That's why it's a water theme park rather than just a water park. So I bring this up because, again, Epic Universe opening in 2025, I think we all agree that's a theme park. So I'm now making an appeal to my fellow entertainment writers out there. Alicia, I hope you're listening. You know, I think it's time we stop indulging Universal Orlando when it comes to this whole Volcano Bay is a water theme park nonsense. So next year, folks, I want us, once Epic Universe opens, to call a spade that, you know, at that point, the Universal Orlando Resort has three theme parks and one water park. Okay. All right. I'm getting off my soapbox.
Do you think that's
going to
work, Jim? Do you think you're going to work? All right. You're going to walk out. I mean, it sounds a lot better now. Oh, Disney has four theme parks. So does Universal. I think that's what's going to happen. But I agree with you wholeheartedly, Jim, the entire duration. Okay. Yes, I was a little tribal at the time, but I'm like, come on, stop this with three theme parks.
There we go. Now, important to note here, Universal Creative has been trying to get this idea, a land, a ride, an attraction of size that celebrates the Universal classic monsters, those icons of horror. They've been trying to get this to work since the Universal Tram Tour first opened for business back in Hollywood in July of 64. Now, Disney, it had its characters. The walk-arounds, by the way, as we know them today, they weren't actually introduced to Disneyland Park till the summer of 61. And in fact, I think Len and I have talked at length about this. We did a show about how Bill Justice, Walt personally put him in charge in developing costumes for the park. Now, Jay Stein, as we mentioned, top of the show, the MCA executive who rode herd on the Tram Tour project, he wanted Universal Hollywood to have some of the same elements as Disneyland. And in this specific case, he wanted walk-around characters. So, and again, you know, thanks to their longtime association with Walter Lantz, Universal did have Woody Woodpecker. In fact, we just mentioned this cartoon character, top of the show. Evidently, he's a terrible driver. And you can have this terrible driver for $43.99. That's a lot to pay for a popcorn bucket, isn't it? Or is that just me?
How many buckets does popcorn does it come with?
There we go. All right. Interesting question. Okay. But Woody, with Woody, you only got one walk-around character, and Jay wanted more. So he thought, well, you know, Universal has its classic monsters. Why don't we have team members dress up as those horror icons and then have them wander around the entertainment center? That, by the way, was what the upper lot was called back in the 60s or thereabouts. So, and these characters would then interact with people who were waiting for their tram tour to depart. So early on, they had costumes made. They had a Phantom of the Opera based on the character Lon Chaney played in the film of the same name. Universal released that film to theaters back in November of 1925. It was a silent film. And what's kind of interesting is sound comes in just 3 years later. And a year after that, Universal produces a sound version of Lon Chaney's Phantom of the Opera. They actually go back in and record dialogue and music and make it the new soundtrack for this. And weird part of the story, Eric, is Lon Chaney has nothing to do with this conversion. And it's not because Lon didn't want to be part of the project. At that time, 1929, he's now under exclusive contract MGM, and he's literally, you know, he's expressly forbidden for working on anything related to Universal. Okay. Next, we have a Dracula walk around. That's based on the Bram Stoker character that Bela Lugosi plays in the film of the same name, which Universal sent out into theaters on February 14th, 1931. That sounds like a lovely evening. Valentine's
Day. Flowers and Dracula.
Yeah, put a stake right to your heart. Okay. Then we got Frankenstein's monster, based by the Mary Shelley-invented character that Boris Karloff played in a Universal Pictures production, which was released to theaters November 21st, 1931. And that, Eric, that just fascinates me, that Dracula was such a huge hit right out of the box that Carl Laemmle Jr., that's the son of the then head of Universal Studios, Carl Laemmle Sr., he says, hey, let's make another horror movie. And 9 months and a week later, Frankenstein is out in theaters. Well, okay, but realistically, it takes a lady 9 months to make a baby. So, I mean, suddenly we're impressed that, you know, 9 months and a week, somebody, a studio can make a movie. It's like, all right, maybe you're onto something there. Also, quick throwaway here. Bela Lugosi was actually supposed to originally play Frankenstein's monster in Universal's Frankenstein. And what's interesting, Eric, is you can go online right now and see the teaser posters that Universal made for this version of the movie. But evidently, they just started pre-production, and Bela went down to Jack Pierce's office. He's the guy, their makeup magician at Universal. And he sat in the chair, and Jack did the first things of makeup for Frankenstein's monster. He's like, no, not doing this. No. And left. And that's how Boris Karloff got the gig. Okay. We now move on to The Mummy, based on the title of the Karloff film that Universal released December of 32. So 1 month and a year from when the original Frankenstein hits. And again, this is the second elaborate and extremely painful to wear makeup that Jack Pierce makes for Boris Karloff. And he reportedly joked at the time, have I done something to offend Jack? You know, couldn't you come up with a simple makeup for me to wear?
I mean, right, you know, read the scripts or know exactly what he's getting into here. Like,
I don't know what to tell you. You know, just but okay. And then Bride of Frankenstein, title character of the Frankenstein sequel that, by the way, came out 89 years ago this week. It debuted on April 22nd, 1935. Elsa Lancaster played a dual role. James Wall film that she was Mary Shelley in the prologue and then the bride in the end of the film. And then finally, we have The Wolfman, title character of Universal Pictures December 1941 release with Lon Chaney Jr., the son of the actor who played Universal's original Phantom. He's also wearing another spectacular but very uncomfortable makeup created by Jack Pierce. So these are the six Universal classic monsters: the Phantom, Dracula, Frankenstein's monster, Bride of Frankenstein, Mummy, and the Wolfman, that Jay Stein sets loose on the upper lot. You know, figuring that, you know, I spend all this money on costumes for team members to wear, and you figure people who are waiting for their turn to climb on the glamour trim, you know, they're going to love these guys. They're going to get their pictures taken with these icons of horror. It's just going to be like those walk around characters at Disneyland.
Oh yeah.
And Eric, as you might expect, did not work out the way that Jay expected, that people would see these walk around versions of the Universal classic monsters coming at them and would flee in terror because they're icons of horror, you know. Right. All right.
You're and supposed little to run from these things like we were trained by watching. You run right. from these monsters.
You run from these monsters. I mean, but it's The Mummy. You can walk slowly, but you get the idea. All right. But these little kids especially were having a poor reaction to encountering the Universal classic monsters, which then led to angry parents and guest relations who were demanding refunds. And Jay Stein did not like giving out refunds. But then again, I mean, other than Woody Woodpecker, you know, Jay didn't have any walkarounds he could use to entertain tourists who were, again, waiting to get on their glamour trim, unless he put the Universal classic monsters out in the park. So Jay now goes to the costume department at Universal Hollywood and says, I need a kid-friendly monster. I need a walk-around character that won't frighten children. And the costume department went off, thought about it, and then came up with Frankenstein Jr. And now, out ahead of recording the show tonight, I sent Mr. Hersey some photos I was able to chase down of Frankenstein Jr. Will you tell the nice people, will you describe this character?
Well, let's first just say, Jim, you sent this photo just saying, hey, you'll need this later.
Yeah.
I'm literally not knowing anything that we're talking about. This is, I look at this, there is, I think it's more creepy than the actual Frankenstein personally, but it is maybe a 3 foot, 4 foot. It's a smaller individual. It's not as tall.
It is.
Wearing a red jacket, an orange turtleneck, some like green shorts. He really does look like something you would draw in a Scooby-Doo episode.
Okay, I can get behind that. He's also got puffy cartoon like boots, and he's also got big white eyes. I mean, honestly, folks, this walk around character looks like Mickey Mouse and Frankenstein's monster had a baby.
Absolutely.
But here's the thing. Frankenstein Jr. worked. Kids didn't run away from him when they saw this walk-around character wandering around the upper lot. Even more impressive, when Frankenstein Jr. went out and did sets with his mom and dad. I mean, when the Frankenstein Jr. was paired with team members who were playing Frankenstein's Monster or the Bride of Frankenstein, people saw this as a cute family unit. And, you know, now visitors to the Universal Studios tour were happy to get their pictures taken with the Frankenstein family. And to further muddy the water here, what's especially interesting is in the early days of the Universal Tram Tour, this is when The Munsters was being filmed on the lower lot at Universal. In fact, as part of the tram tour, you used to be able to drive by 1313 Mockingbird Lane. And every so often, what was truly bizarre is that Fred Gwynn, the gentleman who played Herman Munster, and Al Lewis, the guy who played Grandpa, would actually come strolling out of their sound stages, you know, in full costume, like, oh, hi, folks, you know, and interact with folks on the tram. So in a weird sort of way, Frankenstein Jr. was like, oh, yeah, you're like that Herman Munster guy. You know, it's
that
like, oh, cool.
Awesome. That is awesome. No, that's crazy.
Okay. So, but what's interesting, and another thing that Jay Stein learned over time was, well, visitors to Universal Studio Tour, may have gotten upset when they encountered the Universal Classic Monsters wandering around the upper lot, but these same folks were perfectly okay with watching other people be turned into monsters, which, by the way, brings us now to the Land of a Thousand Faces show, which ran at Universal Studio in Hollywood from the summer of 75 through Christmas of 79. And by the way, Eric, fun fact, this show was actually named as a tribute to Lon Chaney Sr., who at the height of his career was known as the Man of a Thousand Faces. Oh, but
okay.
Okay. So anyway, the Land of a Thousand Faces show was presented on in an outdoor arena on the upper lot that sat 1,700 people. And what was interesting is team members who were working the queue outside would, you know, chat with people and eventually select a couple that looked like, okay, you're fun, you're game, come with us. And then when the audience went inside and was, you know, went into this outdoor arena and took their seats, and this was just a 20-minute long show, but as soon as the audience was seated, the makeup people would come out with this couple and put them on stage. And over this 20-minute long show, they would make them up to look like Frankenstein's monster and the bride. And the people in the audience just ate it up because it's like, oh, these are, you know, people just like us, and now they're monsters. And this was the thing. This made Jay Stein think, it's like, you know, it's like they like them. you know, we just have to think of better ways to use the Universal Classic monsters. There's got to be a way for these icons of horror to become like those Disney walk-around characters, you know. But how do we do this without frightening kids and then ticking off their parents? And the idea that Jay came up with actually involved shutting down that outdoor arena, the one where the Land of a Thousand Faces was presented, and then leveling that part of the upper lot, because what Jay wanted to build next, what was going to be bigger and far more elaborate, it was also going to be indoors and scary, but in a grand way. So what are we talking about, Eric? We are talking about Castle Dracula, and we'll get to that part of this story of the Universal Classic Monsters on the next episode of the Epic Universal Podcast.
I'm looking forward to that one. And I will tell you, so I get little nuggets of what we possibly might be talking about. So I looked up the Land of a Thousand Faces on YouTube. With no context, you absolutely have no idea what's going on. I'll tell you that right now. I'm like, what is going on? And we'll have to talk about this in the future. Somehow, everyone go out there and look for it. The Incredible Hulk, and then watch him destroy some type of dummy. It is far more brutal than the Hulk beating up Loki in the Avengers movie. It is puny god to an extreme.
I am so glad you brought that up, because yes, that is that you know. But again, what you have to remember is the Incredible Hulk TV series was being shot on the Universal lot, and so it was like, this is our character, we can use it, and that's how the show ended, with the Hulk coming through the wall and destroying the set, and it's like, well, thanks for coming, folks. Goodbye. But speaking of audience engagement, we've gotten a couple of listener emails, right?
We on our Patreon, as if you're not sure, it's patreon.com/Jim Hill Media. We upload the episodes, and we love it when people comment. I want to give a shout out to Nick Driss, who has been commenting and liking and sharing all types of stuff. So good shout out to you. Thanks for your insight on all types. But I have a question for you, Jim, because I'm no help right now, but we have Allison, who left a comment on our latest, and it's basically, we were talking about staying on property last week. Essentially says, since it seems more sense to stay on property, could someone please explain all the hotel options or point in the right direction where they can get that information? Obviously, we're not going to explain it all on this show. That's not something we can do in another minute. But Jim, where should we point? What should we do in this situation? Where would you suggest?
Well, actually, my buddy Seth Kapersky has written The Unofficial Guide to Universal Orlando. It's a companion book to Lens, The Unofficial Guide for Walt Disney World. And Seth, if ever there's anybody on the planet who can lay out the hotel options for you, Allison, I bet it's Seth. So hop on Amazon or head out for your local Barnes & Noble and grab yourself a copy. Take a look and let Mr. Kapersky explain, you know, where you can stay and what your best choice might be.
And I think that's a great idea, because I've actually bought that from the local Barnes & Noble. That's how I'm doing a little bit of my homework. So most of my homework is listening to the wonderful Professor Jim Hill in all of this. But if other people want to hear from you, Jim, where can we find you on online?
Well, all right. I'm on X, Twitter, whatever you want to call it. Likewise, Instagram as Jim Hill Media. And over on Facebook as Jim Hill Media News. Eric, on the other hand, where can the nice folks find you?
I'm way active on X at this moment in time. I'm trying to up my game, so just find me at Eric Hersey.
Mm-hmm. Got it. Okay. And while you're at it, folks, we want to remind you, we do have a couple of other podcasts here we'd love for you to sample. We've mentioned Mr. Testa, and of course, he and I do Disney Dish together. Likewise, there is Fine Tuning. That's our animation news podcast that I do that with Drew Taylor, who also does the wonderful Light the Fuse the official Mission Impossible podcast with Charles Hood. Brian Gunn and I just recorded a brand new episode of Looking at Lucasfilm. He was at Disneyland sampling their Season of the Force. And then, of course, there's Eric's lovely bride, Lauren. And in fact, she just slung the script for the next I Want That Too at me tonight. So, you know, as we were prepping this show, and it reminded me that, yeah, you're going to be talking about your Muppets eating space jelly glasses. So it's like, all right, I'll go right then. And then, of course, there is our Disney Unpacked, the video project that we're doing with veteran Imagineer Jim Shull. Eric is doing yeoman's work producing this thing. In fact, we're about to record a brand new Dumbo-themed episode that Eric's going to have to wait in and fix. But let's see, beyond that, again, we mentioned that on our next Epic Universal podcast, yes, we will be talking about Castle Dracula, which in turn then led to Fortress Dracula, which was a walkthrough that was based on a Universal Picture release that will be celebrating its 20th anniversary, the theatrical release, mind you, next month on May 7th, 2004 was when it went out into theaters. And We'll get to that film and the attraction that was inspired by it on the next show. But I think that's going to do it, Eric.
I think so. And I'm excited for that next show. So you guys chime in, let us know. And until then, I'm Eric Hersey on behalf of Jim Hill. Thanks for listening.